we all deserve a second chapter, and it is out there waiting for you. But it does take work to really understand and start to shape and to feel what it should be.
Rosie Nixon is this week's guest. She's an acclaimed author, broadcaster, consultant and coach. But we might all know her as the woman who brought us Hello Magazine, because Rosie for 16 years nurtured that title, her last position being editor-in-chief. She showed us a way of bringing us what might be called analogue these days, but a magazine so powerful in its way it brought us the news, a glimpse into the lives of those that we admire, but all through a lens of kindness.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Rosie, diaries have permitted, we're together on Conversations of Inspiration. Welcome.
Oh, I'm so pleased, Holly, to be here. I love this podcast. I'm very honoured to be here as a guest.
Well, Rosie, you don't need introduction, but for anybody who doesn't know you, you're, of course, an extraordinary author, broadcaster, coach and a consultant, but you've had the most illustrious star-studded career. So I'm feeling already quite inferior, because you were the editor-in-chief of Hello Magazine, a magazine for 16 years that you held the prime position. It must be that you've actually seen it all. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, quite a lot in that time. And yeah, I wasn't the prime position for the whole time, but I kind of worked my way up there, but initially as joint editor and then editor and then editor in chief for a number of years. So I have seen quite a lot of royal history in that time, a number of showbiz weddings, lots of at-home shoots and baby shoots. And it, I mean, it was fantastic. It was a really big and important and defining part of my career. Yeah.
It's actually a really defining publication, actually, I think. And we're going to talk about that. And actually, we're also going to talk about what I have been so inspired by, but your courage in opening up about your journey as a woman and brave enough to share when it becomes too much. And I know you and I off camera have spoken a lot about this, and I can't wait to capture it in the library of Conversations of Inspiration. But as you know, as a listener, I start from the beginning, and I have to say there wasn't a lot out there about your start in life, but I do know you grew up in London. I know that you were the daughter of parents who were teachers. So either that means potentially you rebelled because you were being brought up with teachers at home, or it meant you were pretty good. Which one was it?
Well, do you know what? I would say a little bit of both. And it probably depends who you ask and on what day the memories of my childhood would come back. But there was definitely a bit of a rebellious teen in there, pushing boundaries, wanting to go out a lot to Camden Palace and places like that rather young age, and sitting on the top deck of buses until late at night. But I was brought up by teachers. So it was a very down to earth, I would say, kind of normal, very loving background, which I think has given me great stability in life. I've always known how loved I was and how cared for. And I think that probably gave me a lot of confidence to try all the things that I have, because I had no sort of direct way into the publishing world. My parents weren't uber connected in those circles. So I'm really kind of had to graft.
Yeah.
And I got my first job after going to university at Sussex as the unpaid work experience. You know, I really have worked my way up in roles, from having lots of bar jobs so that I could pay my rent, but doing the thing that I loved kind of from the beginning, but working up from nothing. You know, I remember my first salary as editorial assistant when I worked in book publishing, actually, initially, just before I got into magazines. And my first salary was £10,000 per year.
Yeah.
And I remember I would get my paycheck, which was £600 every month, 380 of which went on rent. And then obviously I needed to have other jobs to keep that going. So I'm definitely a story of graft,
yeah,
and not being handed anything on a silver spoon. And certainly my dad had challenges as well in his life growing up. And he then went on to become a headmaster of one of the biggest comprehensives in London. So we're definitely a family of hard workers, I would say.
Was it a happy childhood, would you say?
It was a really happy childhood. Yeah, it really, really was. It wasn't full of extravagance. You know, the first time I went on a plane was when I was about 16 and when I went on a school skiing trip. So all of our family holidays were trips, loading up the Ford Cortina and getting on the ferry to France, generally going on holiday with another family. There was always lots of laughter. Mum and Dad loved having parties as well. I remember those a lot at home.
Yeah.
So it wasn't extravagant, but it was very loving and it was definitely creative. Mum was an English teacher. Dad's subjects were history and politics. So there was a lot of conversation and creativity all the time, which I suppose probably started my love of writing and journalism and an interest in other people.
It's amazing, isn't it? When you think about, I mean, obviously we are all brought up differently and have different opportunities and privilege. But one of the things that I do think about so many of my guests that come on, when we talk about our childhoods, it's things like my first plane ride was when I was 16. I remember, I think I'm right, and basically I do not think, apart from a couple of memories, I went ever to a restaurant with my parents, ever. Mm. I mean, you know, not until I mean, it was quite a big deal if we went to a restaurant. And it was only when we went abroad, again, load up the car, we would go to France. We lived in Holland, so we could actually just get in the car and go places. We'd eat then in restaurants. But when we were at home, there was no sort of Friday night go and have a meal or all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
It does feel quite different to these days. And again, that's when I talk about privilege and things like that.
Yes.
But it feels like some of these things that we held quite dear, slightly, I don't know whether I'm right in saying this, are more expected from our young now.
Yeah, that is true to some extent. I suppose this just feels like there's so much on offer now, that there are so many decisions to be made of what you want to do. And that is quite overwhelming. Maybe life was that much simpler and it was a smaller world, wasn't it? Because the internet
didn't exist. Well, you only had the cinema, didn't you? Cinema and
exactly.
shopping. That was
and
it.
Your parents didn't know where you were, though, when you left the house, you know, and I spent a lot of time in Grovelands Park and, you know, and on the bus to Camden, as I've said, and in various drinking establishments in Wood Green.
Various outfits, maybe in your rucksack or something.
Absolutely. Yes. And so the world was so much smaller, I guess.
I agree.
Which was a lot easier in some ways. I do feel for these, you know, our generations of kids and my children that I'm bringing up now and how we're trying to protect them from that online world. And I'm definitely all for the kind of anti-smartphone movement in schools because we want to protect them a bit and to enjoy the childhood that we had.
Slow down. And life being smaller is actually a great thing as well.
It is.
I read that when you were young, you loved your diary and you loved writing your diary. You love creating your own magazines by cutting up, Smash Hits. I used to get a subscription to Smash Hits.
Yeah.
And then sticking different pages back together again. So you had this potentially this dream of working in magazines even from a young age. Do you see that now? Obviously, at the time, you didn't see it.
That's it. At the time, I didn't see it at all, but I was a prolific sort of writer. So I've still got my diaries here and they are sort of like the equivalent of the Adrian Mole diary of a girl. And I've, you know, stick things in it and I would draw sketches of the outfit that I was going to wear to so-and-so's party at the weekend. And I mean, it just takes me right back because I'm still that little girl, you know, inside. And I remember all of those feelings. And I guess for me that writing was my go-to as a way to process what I was feeling and what was happening in the world around me. And it's always been that way. Likewise, I've got a whole box stuffed full of letters that I'd received from friends and things that I'd kept to send them. And so I suppose I was flexing that muscle from a young age and was a consumer of magazines. I used to have Smash Hits delivered and also Sky magazine. Do you remember Sky?
No.
Oh, Sky. Yeah, Sky was a super cool magazine. It had like Amanda de Cadenet on the cover and things
wow.
like that. And I remember getting it delivered when I was probably a bit too young to
I remember
be consuming
seven, is it 17?
Just 17.
Just 17.
Yeah, there was as well. Sky was almost aimed at slightly older. And I didn't understand half of it, but I just felt like it's really cool to have Sky delivered. Yeah, exactly. And I did that taping of the top 40, you know, on my Casio recorder, pausing, so that you didn't
waiting.
Get Bruno Brooks's voice or whoever it was at the time.
And in Smash Hits, there were, do you remember the song lyrics?
Oh, yeah.
Cutting out the song lyrics.
Yeah.
Stick those up and then put it, play it, and then you could sing it because you had.
Sing along.
I mean, because you didn't have the internet.
Exactly. And think how much time that took as well,
yeah.
the creativity. And I'd loved sitting at my desk doing all of that and putting it together. So in a way, I was sort of refashioning things into my own magazine or editing it, curating it in a certain way, although I had no idea that I would, you know, obviously go on to do that as for a living.
I bet you had the smelly pens as well and the pencils.
I did. The stickers,
that you got from the
sticker
French
collection
hypermarket when
yes!
you would go across there. Mum and Dad would get tons of booze. My legs would even be not able to go in the footwell because my mum would be stuffing bottles of wine that we were going to take over home. And then we would get to, I mean, obviously they did buy other things, by the way, everybody, but that was the great thing because it was beautiful wine and it was cheap. And then we got to go to the stationery aisles in the French hypermarket.
That was my dream. And I used to be fully togged out in Naff Naff and Tonsil Ton. Do you remember?
Oh my goodness, Naff Naff. I love it.
And remember those French sweets that were really long on a thing that I used to get loads of those to take back home to my friends. Bike stickers as well. I had a really big sticker collection that you would take them off the little backs and put them on clear pages.
Oh my God. And what about those pencil cases?
Pencil case?
You could zip. They had like two sort of sections and you would go into school.
Open all the bits.
And everyone would be with their little W.H. Smith pencil case. And you would be back from hypermarket with these amazing
the stationery.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, I love that. And I still love that actually. You should see behind here, I've got a drawer full of notepads because I just love a new notepad.
You know,
there is something about stationery.
This is what we call it at Holly
& Co.
Stationery philia. I mean, it is it's a real thing that us women suffer from, but it's a great, great issue to have. Let's go back because you talked about university and you studied history, thanks to maybe dad's influence at Sussex University. And then shortly after, you took a job as the editor of Barbie magazine, which is quite topical now.
It is.
Tell me about that time of your life and what you learnt in that role and what it was like being in the world of Barbie, because of course it's an iconic character, idolised. We've obviously had the recent movie, but was there a response? I mean, you were young. How old were you at that point?
Yeah, so I was probably, early 20s, probably about 24, something like that. And I'd worked straight out of uni in book publishing. And then I had seen this advert in the Monday Guardian, which was always the Media Guardian day. Yeah. And that was where jobs were advertised, again, because we couldn't find a space for them online because it didn't really exist. And I'd go through it on a Monday and there'd be all these amazing jobs. I think, well, I haven't got a hope in hell of getting that because I haven't got any actual experience in magazines. And then I saw this one as editor, looking for an editor of Barbie magazine. And I was working in children's books. And as I've mentioned, I'd worked my way up from the unpaid work experience through editorial assistant to become eventually a book editor. So I had a lot of experience on children's books editing. And I thought, well, those skills are very transferable because I know about how to, you know, bring books together for children and for them to offer some educational value as well as the big responsibility you have in children's publishing, what you're putting into very young and impressionable minds. So I went for this role. and got it, much to my kind of shock. And it was just me and a designer doing everything for that magazine, which wow. at the time was one of the best-selling titles for young girls in the UK. And it came out fortnightly. And it was part of a bigger publishing house that looked after lots of licensed character magazines. So the Disney magazines were done there. There was Thomas the Tank Engine magazine.
And now, these still are going, right?
Yeah, they're still going.
These are the ones. This is what we're talking about, the same magazine. The
really strong brands. Yeah, Barbie's still going.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
and Barbie, we shared an office with 2000 AD. I don't know if you remember that comic. It was a comic strip about Judge Dredd.
Yes, I do.
Called 2008. And the guys that ran that were kind of the personification of Judge Dredd.
They'd
come in with their long coats, like leather coats and big
and
boots.
And you'd come
and
in
we
for
were
Barbie.
In this pink, we were in this pink world surrounded by dolls because we'd get sent so much stuff from Mattel, you know, all the new products. Yeah. And we used to do photo shoots with the new Barbie every fortnight. And I had this photographer I worked with called Steve, and we used to get the Barbie, and sometimes we'd have her in a fish tank, you know, shooting underwater, getting the hair. Sometimes I'd have the hair dry, blowing it out like a, you know, a proper fashion shoot with the doll to look, make her look amazing for the cover. So in a funny way, I learned about the whole editorial process.
Gosh, you did the whole A to Z.
We did the whole A to Z. Flat planned it, decided what was going to be on every single page, wrote most of the copy. So I used to write stories about Barbie and Ken and then send them off to Mattel, who obviously owned the Barbie license, so that they could approve it. And I liaised with the lovely girl there. And I used to create word searches, puzzles, comic strips. I mean, you name it, everything was in there, was generally created by me and the designer.
That is an amazing experience, isn't it?
Well, it was, because I learned about every single stage of the editorial process. Mm. And I had lots of support there as well. And I learned about marketing the magazine. We had free gifts on every cover.
Yeah.
You know, I made some mistakes there as well and learned on the job and wrote all the cover lines and could see, you know, what sold particularly well, what worked, what didn't, how we needed to tweak it. So it was an amazing sort of starting point, really, and straight in at the top as an editor.
Incredible. What do you think about the evolution of Barbie? And obviously we saw the film last summer, and I read an interesting piece the other day that said Barbie isn't a role model, but actually a mirror of our societal norms and expectations that are basically constantly changing.
Well, I think that's right. I think she's been on a huge journey, and the doll has evolved massively from the time that I was editing that magazine. Because I even remember, you know, looking back and some of the stories I'd write about Barbie, and I felt that she should be this empowering figurehead. You know, she shouldn't be the secretary in the workplace. She should be the boss. But it sometimes could be a bit of a battle having that discussion with Mattel, because the doll's psyche was very sort of rigid then.
Yes.
And that has changed so much. I think it's amazing that we've seen Barbie reflect back the changing position of women throughout society. And I think it's so important that she does, because there couldn't be a more impressionable audience or consumer for her. So she's come a long way. And I have to say, I loved the movie. I thought it was really great fun. And it was such a shame it missed out on some of the big awards, because it was such a huge box office hit as well.
Yeah.
So it was great to see her having a moment again. And I always feel a sort of very affectionate towards that character as well, because of the impact she had on the beginning of my career.
She's got such a place in your life.
She really has.
Really has. So let's go now into your world of, I'm not saying Barbie's not glossy magazine, of course, but you slightly went glossier.
I've gone up in age.
You went glossier. So as a journalist in magazines, you worked for companies such as magazines such as Bliss, New Woman, Red, Glamour, Grazia. This is an exciting world, and no 2 days could have looked the same. And it must have been, just because I'm building up to almost your point where you then enter Hello. Mm. What was this world like? Was it, were you just watching yourself progressing? Were you learning new skills in each magazine?
I was really learning on the job, you know, as I feel like I've done in nearly all of my careers. You know, I didn't go into any one job fully formed. I was a product of the people I was around and the experiences that I was lucky enough to have, and some really amazing editors who championed me. Mm. I think we all need people that are going to champion us in our careers to give us that opportunity. And I had some brilliant editors who sort of helped me believe in my abilities as a writer and as a features editor, because I initially, when I went to work on what I call like the big mags, sort of left the Barbie in the kids' world and went to work at Looks magazine, initially as a production editor on that side, because that was the vacancy and the job that I could get, mm-hmm. which wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. I really wanted to be on the writing and the features side.
Yep.
And my then editor, Margie Conklin, who's over in New York and has been for a long time now at the New York Post, gave me the role of features editor. She sort of saw that in me, and that really, I consider, one of my big breaks to move across, because it does take somebody having faith in you.
Yeah.
And from then on, my career sort of stayed on that side of editorial, and I had some amazing experiences. I mean, for a long while, I was sort of the person that would be sent out on the job to do something like, I remember at Glamour, going from Z-list to A-list in 24 hours to go to the Oscars and be fully made over and have all the fake tans. And I remember being sent to Cannes once for New Woman, I think, to try and bag a millionaire within 24 hours. You know, those kind of features.
Oh, I love those features.
Because they knew I would probably do it, because I just had a real sort of hunger, you know, to want to make things work. And I loved the fun of it. And I don't think I ever took it for granted, because I realised how lucky I was to have got here.
And it's amazing, isn't it? These women that you're talking, I'm presuming they were women.
Yeah,
they were picking you up and giving you that opportunity. Mm. You know, you're not fully formed, you're not completely qualified, but they see something in you and they take a punt.
Yes.
And I think that that's something that we all as women really need to do, and look around us and just do question ourselves, you know, what if we're in positions that we employ people, et cetera, et cetera, you know, what's the worst? Can you do homegrown? Can you do homegrown before
first.
You go out and look for other people who potentially might be more qualified on paper, but actually, you know, is it better that you know the individual and you can mould them rather than bringing in someone new that can be work out, or it can upset the apple cart?
Totally. And I think if you don't, you know, have come into an industry without all of those immediate connections, then you really are reliant on people, you know, who are going to see that in you. But also you have to be self-reliant too, and put your hand up in that meeting and say, I'll do that. You know, I think I was, I was the person that made the tea for everybody before I got the job. You know, I was the person that wasn't too proud to do anything, you know, and I like to think I'm still that person.
That's your grit.
Absolutely.
That you were talking about.
Yeah. And I think you have to be prepared to do that, to put the work in to get there.
Yeah.
Because I think it isn't necessarily always going to just fall in your lap.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a friend that always taught, her father was in the film industry, and she said, you know, my dad just taught me, you are never to stand still or sit still, never. You in this industry, you know, you are always, whether it's a cup of tea, there is always something to be done. Look like you are that person, well, be that person, not look like it, be the person that is always, always busy, ready to help, do that. And the doors will open. What advice would you give? You just mentioned there, if you don't have the contacts, if you don't have that world already set up, you didn't, for instance, have that world set up for you from your parents.
No.
What advice would you share to anyone looking to get into the world of journalism? Because as I said, it's a bit like film industry, or it's a bit like there are certain industries that are hard to get into.
The media world has changed so much. I mean, magazines had a lot of power. You know, print was kind of where it was at when I was working in them. And now there are so many different entrance points to the media world. Obviously, digital is just as important to any big media company as the print, or if not more so now. So there are lots of different entrance points. So don't be too sort of focused on exactly which area you want to get into. It's great to have a goal in mind, but be prepared to maybe go a slightly squiggly way to get to where you want to be. And I would say, but the resilience, I mean, there were plenty of jobs I didn't get that I did apply for in the Media Guardian. I remember going for one, I think it was like a deputy editor of Elle Decoration or something. And again, I like had my Barbie and books experience, but I still went for it because I thought, there's a really long shot, you know, it's really unlikely I'm going to get this, although I do love interior design. But I went for it and I got an interview, I remember, which was an amazing experience just to have had that interview. I think it was quite plain to both of us that I wasn't the right candidate in that interview. But I made a contact there. You know, I met somebody, they saw my enthusiasm. I could ask her for advice. Similarly, I nearly went to New York at one point, was offered a job on American Elle, a maternity cover. And again, didn't take it in the end. But I had an interview with the editor of American Elle, who was like, you know, a legend.
A god.
All of that is great experience. It doesn't matter if the end result isn't perhaps the one that you might have wanted at the time. How can you use it? How can you see it as a positive? None of those experiences I consider a failure, even though I didn't get them at the last hurdle or didn't end up doing that. But they were all part of my journey.
It's funny, isn't it, though? Because I think you and I, and we're going to talk more and more, we're going to come into your story about Hello Magazine now, but we'll touch on your passion midlife and moving things and changing things and taking control. But when we look back, and from what you're saying, this is exactly how we look back at things. It's all the different tiny bits of the journey, the tiny experiences and parts of our individual jigsaw puzzle that make us who we are today. And it potentially, and we're going to talk about that, dries up, you know, our confidence to do that. But as you said, look at all those moments that you had, and who knows, if you hadn't have had all those moments, would you have had the confidence? Would you be the person who you are? And it's so important that we remember this. We remember how important it is for our story, and our story at our age is still just getting going. And if we're not having those little interactions and getting ourselves out of our comfort zone and, you know, L Deco Magazine. What's your experience? Barbie?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Would you do that? You know, it would take so much to now do it at our age.
Absolutely.
But that's exactly the point. You don't know what will happen.
Yeah. And it's all a question of mindset, I think, to think, well, you know what? It's like to keep that positive mindset and see it all as a useful part of your journey in some way. Even the things that don't go to plan, there is always a learning there. And I think that so many things are out of our control. I mean, that El Deco job ended up going to somebody that already worked on the team. And I remember thinking, God, I bet they already probably knew that, you know, but decided to see a few other people and were intrigued by this random from Barbie magazine. And maybe that is the case, because so much is out of your control and you can't ever, you know, have control over that. But what you can control is your own mindset and what you, you know, take away from it. That is always within us, no matter what happens.
Well, I can't quite believe I'm saying this, but I'm celebrating a very special anniversary. I worked out that I've been championing small businesses for 20 years, since creating a local crafts fair 2 decades ago, and then founding my first online marketplace, Not on the High Street, in 2006. I have worked with thousands of entrepreneurs and creatives across the UK. And one thing I've learned is life is far too short not to do what you love. By starting your own business, you can follow your dreams, work in a way that suits you, and live every day knowing you're getting to do that thing you're just most passionate about, the diamond that makes you you, that makes you shine. If you're not sure where to begin, just visit the business advice section on holly.co and discover how to start. Because the truth is, you don't need a complicated business plan or even any experience. Our articles, podcast episodes, and my book, Do What You Love, Love What You Do, are full of insight and all the ungoogleable, invaluable nuggets of information that no one really tells you to break it down step by step. Visit holly.co to find out more, or follow me at Holly Tucker on Instagram. Now, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. So let's go to the next part of your career, Hello Magazine. As you said, you worked your way up to basically editor and chief and the woman who represented Hello. I mean, it's an institution, isn't it? It's like, it really is one of those magazines that I think every single person listening has a story about. And it's got an amazing following, and celebrities and weddings, like you said, and babies and royals. And we've seen the whole lot. But it is a very sort of, I would say, I don't know, it's got a very special place in people's heart, because I would say it's the magazine you get when potentially you're having me time. Potentially you're relaxing, or you're, as a woman, you just want to go into another world. I felt it was very, very optimistic as well. And I think now, knowing you, you're behind that. So tell me about this incredible world that you found yourself in.
Yeah, it was interesting you say that about it, because I think that is true. I mean, for a great many people, it's the magazine they read in the hairdressers or in the doctor's surgery. And the thing with the copy of Hello is that it does hang around for many years. We also considered it the magazine of record. So in big moments for British society, Hello would be there with a special issue. So
yes, it would,
some of my most memorable issues are those of big royal occasions, like the wedding of William and Kate, where we almost operated half as a newspaper, half as a glossy magazine, churning out hundreds of pages in a very short space of time. But, you know, pulling out the most iconic images and moments of a huge event that will go down in history. So those were some of the most exciting times working on the magazine. And it was a weekly, so obviously there's a lot of pressure to that. And the rhythm of the week would build up to a Friday when we'd go to press on a Friday night. And there were times when we'd have a magazine full of sort of 240 pages. So it was thick. It's not quite as big as that now in print.
How did you deal with having a weekly, for listeners, we just need to take a little beat here and think about what we're talking about. Rosie's dealing with a weekly, as important as a newspaper to get all the facts completely correct, but needing to be entertaining and full of unbelievable images, because actually that's what we're also looking at. And 240 pages weekly, Friday night. There's no sitting down with a glass of wine
Friday
for you,
nights
I can imagine.
Were late. No, they weren't. But, you know, it wasn't me. It was obviously a whole team as
obviously,
well.
The
yeah,
team. But
it was very much a team effort, and everybody had their roles within that. But I think the responsibility of an editor is, you know, it's your head on the block if something goes wrong. I mean, you can you can end up in prison as well as an editor. You are ultimately responsible for what is written on those pages. And there were times when we'd get a lawyer involved, new legal something, because we at the time, for many of the years that I was editor there, the social media didn't exist like it does now. So we were putting out this information genuinely for the first time, and there was no way of cross-checking it. So we obviously had the kind of relationship where we'd work very closely with the stars that we featured. And that was always something I've been really proud and protective of, our relationships with people. But there would still be a few nerve-wracking moments when you think, oh, this will make the strongest cover line, but are we okay saying that? And a lot would go through legal, often at the last minute. And now, you know, it's easier. There's far less conversations like that, because there's so much out there to cross-reference. And it's those exclusives are few and far between, because celebrities have ways of imparting their own exclusives to their audiences. So their relationship with the media is very different. So a huge responsibility.
And just tell me about that with the landscape changing. So as you said, you know, you would... To get that first story, we used to just look at our magazines. That was where it was coming from. And now you're saying, obviously, it's changing. So what is that relationship between magazine and social and its place in our lives? Because, I mean, obviously a tech woman, but I am all for analog. You know, as I'm getting older, more and more, and I want to, and I know you do as well, we're champions on bringing almost the moments to women's lives where they can. I'm right now, you know, talking about filming this podcast or not. And rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly in terms of its reach, But I feel rightly, I feel that audio podcasts, it's in your ears.
It's a different experience.
Do we need to have more things to watch? Do we need, as women, if I'm really talking to a female audience, I know how busy she is. So the same with, you must have felt the same for magazines. And what do you feel its future is?
Well, I think print is a different format. You know, it's a longer read. It's more in depth. Hello is very known for its large photographs and immersive kind of feel. So we can't replicate what you can see on social media or in the digital world. It's a completely different experience. And even the style of writing is different. And there are certain writers that work mostly for the magazine rather than, you know, for the online, because it is a different tone. So I think the more detailed, longer form, and often, you know, we'll work with stars where they might give us, they might put one or two images from their wedding on social media, but then Hello will have the whole shebang.
Right, yes.
And you might pour over the tablescapes in those images.
Yes. Or,
and you will go back to it time and time again. It won't just be a quick flick done like might happen on social media. You might think, oh, actually, I'm going to come back to that later on when I can put my feet up with for a cup of tea. And I think to take us away from our screens these days is really, really important because we're growing increasingly aware, aren't we, of the amount of time we spend online and on our screens. And we know that it is good for our mental health to take a pause from that. And I think really for a media brand, you've got to be available to your audience now 24/7 on whatever platform they might choose to engage with you on. So print is definitely a piece of that, you know, overall picture. It's perhaps smaller in terms of its profitability and the way that we work with commercial partners in print, but it's very much still a key part of the overall plan.
I think also, and with your optimism and the way that Hello came across, you know, it was, it's not tearing anyone down.
No.
It's not a negative, cesspity sort of gossip running off the lines of someone's body and shape and size. I just was thinking as you were speaking, you, in a way, you created a haven for women to come into the brand of Hello. You sort of knew what you were going to get, but there was never like a hidden snidey article about something and you're like, oh, go on, tell me more. Actually, you respected it for being on the side of the person you're interviewing and telling them their story, what they want to put across. Where else do we get that?
Yeah.
Because all I have to do is turn on my phone right now and I will get someone else's opinion and no doubt it's clickbaity. No doubt it is giving me the negative, whatever, our sinning side of our, you know, where we're all sort of slightly still wired into wanting those sorts of things. But there was a moment that, well, there is. Hello is a sanctuary. It's maybe fantastic for our mental health to read magazines.
Yeah, we made that decision. You know, it's part of the USP, really, to be kind always, no matter what. And it's turned into, you know, a superpower. And it is at the heart of building long-term relationships with people, not ruining relationships for a quick headline and a quick sale. You know, knowing that if we play the long game, we will really reap the rewards and we'll get that big exclusive when the time is right. And I think Hello was seen perhaps as an easy target kind of years ago, that perhaps it wasn't, you know, portraying accountable journalism by always being kind and nice. But I absolutely was so determined to turn that on its head. And as we've seen, you know, Hello is probably the magazine with the greatest longevity on the on a very crowded newsstand now, because people know exactly what it stands for. So it turned out to be our absolute strength.
And as you invested in relationships. You know, that's, again, isn't it, when we talk about what's happening, I think, in business generally, and even our psyche as humans, we're also used to quick interaction, grab, run type of, I don't know, existence with our phones, with everything.
Yeah.
We've got to remember what it's like to have relationships and build lifetime business relationships. You know, this is something that's so important. I talk to all small businesses about make friends, not contacts. You know, as you said, you know, what are you going to give away in order to make those sales? Are you going to give away literally a lifetime worth of brand affinity with another company for 1 year's worth of sales? It's something, but do you think it's almost got into our psyche from a from the way that we now live as humans, that that is now sort of clouding our vision when it comes to such important things that take us back 20 years ago. You and I would have gone, yeah, of course, you know, that's obvious.
Yeah, well, I think if you decide, and you know, I care really passionately about this whole subject of kindness, you know, in fact, I've written a book on that subject.
Yes,
but, kindness is a choice, you know, and if we choose that we're going to build strong relationships and that that is going to be something defining about the way we run our careers, then certainly I have seen then that you build, you reap the rewards of that in the long term. And the online world as well, you know, we launched a campaign at Hello called Hello to Kindness because of all of this unkindness and unsupportiveness that we were seeing in the online world, which can be a wild west at times of people throwing around negative commentary and saying things to people that they would never dream of saying to their face. So we made a stand, you know, about that as well and said that we don't welcome this kind of unkindness in our platforms. We want to see people treating each other with respect, whether they're in the public eye or not, because we now are seeing the damage that that is doing to people's mental health.
Absolutely.
You know, you only have to look at Caroline Flack, and there are a number of cases now, and especially in young people. Again, we don't know what the long-term repercussions are. So I feel really proud to have worked and championed and continue to champion a brand that really does genuinely have that kind of compassion at its cool.
So lucky to have a woman with all your experience putting that in such a high level and a high place to, for all of us to absorb. During this period of your life, whilst you're the captain of the ship of Hello and you start family, you have two beautiful sons and you've achieved your first, your dream of writing your first book. Tell me, how do you, and it's one of those questions where, you know, people go, but do you ask a man that question, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you know, reality check is that actually we are seriously multitasking and it can be a huge amount. How did you do it all? Because we're going to then talk about...
Not being able to do it all.
Not yes. to do it all, exactly.
Yes.
But let's do the beginning bit of the story.
Like, yeah.
What was, you know, what? How did you manage that? You know, I'm just thinking about your Friday bloody nights, you know, with whatever panic that would go on.
Yeah, it was a bit of a kind of love-hate relationship and a sort of, you know, trying to make it work. Like I think so many women and men, I'm sure, relate to that there are certain balls that you cannot drop. And that is looking after your children, making sure that they're safe, being able to pay your mortgage, being able to, you know, keep yourself fit and healthy and to hold down the demands of a really busy job. So there were certain weeks when I feel like I'm nailing it and everything is going to plan and I've managed to do everything and I feel great. And there are other weeks.
You've got the formula.
We've got the formula.
You know,
but then it constantly changes.
Yeah.
I think that's
it's like,
the thing.
Hang on a minute. Last week I was Beyonce.
Totally.
Here, and now this week,
and now,
what has gone on?
Or something has changed. Like, you know, at points we had two kids in different places. You know, one's at nursery, one started school. It's like you're constantly having to readjust what is working in your life. And there is a lot going on. And I think as you reach sort of late 40s, which I'll be 49 in July, hormones started to come into play a bit as well. And I felt pretty run ragged this time too. 2 years ago, or probably about a year in before that, it had been building up. We'd also moved house, decided to move out of London, which was totally the right decision for our family to get a bit more space and thinking about what, you know, secondary schools. So we needed to move area. I was juggling lots with my writing career. I'd written a few novels. Somehow I actually look back and a lot of it feels like a bit of a blur and I can't actually remember writing half of them. I'd take myself off for a few nights and just literally write for 48 hours to get it done or stay up late at night and get up early in the mornings. I was obviously very self-motivated and loved doing this. It was all things that I really, really enjoyed and made me thrive. And there's a big part of guilt as well that feels like, oh, you know, I want to be around more for my kids, but it's really hard to fit everything in. I love my writing. I want to be able to do this. And then I feel guilty for moaning because I've brought all this on myself. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not saving lives. I'm just putting a magazine to press. So it can just feel like a melting pot of overwhelm that is really hard to navigate when it starts to affect you physically. And I think for me, there was a lot of running around, trying to be there for children, trying to be there for the magazine, not really switching off in a 24-hour period, because obviously we're at the whim of the news agenda as well. And now that we work on multi-platforms, I'm sure lots of people experience with work, it's coming at you from all sides, email, WhatsApp, Slack channels, you know, as well as phone calls. And I reached a point where I was hosting events as well for Hello and a podcast. And again, a victim of my own sort of ideas, because I'd come up with a brilliant idea for a podcast and get really excited about hosting it. And then that's another thing added on to your role.
Yeah.
And it was a couple of years ago, I literally woke up one morning after a big event I'd hosted that had gone really, really well. So I should really have been on an absolute high. Looked at my phone, was in a London hotel, had missed FaceTime calls from my kids from the night before, had an email inbox that would just made my brain want to explode the minute I looked at it, unread features, various things. I felt completely behind with the issue, with life in general, was thinking I needed, you know, to get through another day of meetings and then wanted to rush back so that I could be there for the kids as soon as they got home, and just thought, I'm done. I just cannot do this anymore. And had this overwhelming urge to just throw my phone out of the window and never see it again, and burst into tears. And that was the beginning of basically being close to burnout and it hitting me physically for the first time. And I've always been someone, yeah, who is very positive, who keeps going.
Yeah.
So this was a major shock to my system.
I want to ask you about that moment. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, because so many women are listening. I'm listening. Because there's this thing, isn't there, where you go, you know, I'm really just overwhelmed right now. And I'm just really overwhelmed, but it's all good. It's all good. It's fine. I can do it. Because you've done it before. And you have so many people, things, responsibilities resting on you being fine. So what comes the point? How do you know? What is it that it's one day you're going to soldier on through and you tasted it, but you didn't quite go there.
Yeah.
To another moment where you literally go,
yeah,
okay, something has got to change. And you say you started crying, and I know we've spoken like you didn't stop crying, that this started to become, it was coming out of you. Because I think, you know, when we say women can have it all, when we talk about doing all, we're perfectionists because we're potentially, I mean, this is a whole other podcast, isn't it? We're in an environment.
Yes.
We're in an environment where no one goes, you know, it's impossible what you're trying to do. I love you for trying, by the way. Love you for trying, but it's impossible. What you're setting yourself out to do is impossible.
For anyone to do.
So we just go for it.
That's it.
For anyone to do.
Well, I think, you know, we all go through overwhelming times and stressful times. And that's kind of something that will always happen in our lives. It's accepted. And I was, you know, I'm happy to deal with that. There are going to be intense times with work in the future. But stress turns into chronic stress when you never, ever give yourself a chance to recalibrate after an especially busy period. And I think with mine, with the relentlessness of the schedule and the pressure I was putting on myself as well, generally a lot of this pressure does come from ourselves, that there maybe are things we can let go, but we're finding hard to for some reason. And, you know, for me, actually, you know, what had then happened to me in taking some time off work led to a huge period of self-awareness and retraining as a life coach, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a minute as well. But that in that moment, the stress had turned into chronic stress, which was a build-up of years of never really giving myself a chance to recalibrate. Even on holiday, I would still work. I was one of those people that said, I'd rather check in on my email so that I know there's not a major emergency going on rather than switch them off. And I really believed in that argument, but actually it meant that I never, ever switched off. I still approved the cover every time, even when I was on holiday every Friday. Yeah. And then you're back in that world. You're not really present with actively choosing to unwind and be with your family and, you know, do things that are going to nourish you and help you regain some of your energy. So I think it was a builder, and your body eventually physically says to you, enough, you know, you've been ignoring that little voice in your head telling you that you need to pare some things back for so long. And you've not been listening to me, that I'm now going to start showing you the physical signs of you needing to stop because I can't cope physically. And it was a really big wake up call for me. I feel quite embarrassed, you know, that I didn't realize really at the time that stress lives in your nervous system and it will affect you physically at some point if you ignore those warning signs for long enough. And it's a huge wake up call when it does start to happen to you.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky, really, that I think I got there before anything more major happened to me.
Yep.
And the doctor that I saw did say to me, you know, why do you think people burst a blood vessel or have heart attacks in their 50s? It's because of stress. You know, gosh, it's built
how
up.
Scary to hear that.
Yeah, that is terrifying.
It is because, I mean, you know, not being funny, you must have had that moment in the hotel room going, do I have time to have this break down here? Do
exactly.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I cannot have this. This is, you know, the kids need to be picked up. I've got the all of these emails.
I don't have time to go to the doctors.
I don't have time. I don't have time to go to the doctors. I don't have time. Very nice, but I will do that. But next month, we've got to get through this bit here and then I will see that. I was reading up because I was thinking about burnout and interviewing you. And 1 in 5 people in the UK are taking time off work because of poor mental health caused by pressure or stress. And yet it is very hard, this relationship, I think, for women.
Yeah.
Because especially if you're leading something or creating something, you feel like, but I've created this.
Yes.
I've done this to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, there was no choice. When you needed to build the brand of Hello, you knew podcasts were on the rise. We should have a podcast, right? It's potentially what needed to happen.
Yeah.
But there is this narrative that we can't do right or wrong, really.
Yeah.
We build the business, then we chastise ourselves for the amount of work we created. And yet actually there's no, I almost look at it like a board, you know, there's no chairman looking down at you saying, you know what you're taking on. In my experience, you need to, you know, you need to do this slightly different or you're going to burn out.
Mm.
You're normally the last port of call, aren't you? You're it. You're the linchpin in family, work, the sanity of your family, health, I don't know, happiness.
Well, that's it. And I think also that a big part of what happened to me was the fact that I had evolved as a person. And I think as women, we do, you know, through the course of our lives, we change. We're a product of all of our experiences. And I had also been doing that job for a very, very long time. And I think I had reached a point, again, not properly tuning into that little voice in my head saying, I think you're just done with this. You've done this for 16 years.
Right.
You've thought of a cover line about the Princess of Wales every week for the last, you know, X number of years. It's giving you stress, you know, it's tipped from being busy to stress because it's not fulfilling you in quite the same way. And that for me was actually the hardest thing to get my head around. I sort of knew in my heart of
being
hearts
honest
that I'd
with
be
yourself.
All right physically. Yeah, I knew. Actually, when I had that moment and I was in tears and couldn't string a sentence together, and my husband actually had to call the doctor to get me signed off because I had no idea how to even do that. But I sort of knew deep down, I'm going to be all right. I'm really well supported. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be okay physically. And actually, what I really need to address is, what am I going to do with my life? What is my career now? Because this isn't
What's
fulfilling me in the same way. I need a new chapter and I'm ready for it because I just don't want to keep going like this. So I say now, you know, I'm very busy again now. For me, it was never about just dropping out of the workforce. And I desperately as well didn't want to be another statistic of a midlife woman who leaves a job potentially at the top of her career and is sort of never seen again, because the stats are really shocking around that.
Yeah.
Especially in the more we know now about menopause symptoms having an impact on women in the workplace. So it wasn't a question of that. You know, I knew I wanted to come back, but it couldn't be in the same guise because I had evolved and I was excited by different things and I needed to go and explore them. And this was the time.
Dell Technologies are passionate champions of small businesses. They recognise that it can be a lonely road, and so they have the Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network, or DWEN for short, which is a worldwide community of over 100,000 female founders. They run free events and mentoring programmes and have a network of brilliant women all connecting and sharing insight. They also recognise that for many small businesses, visibility is one of the biggest challenges they face when trying to reach new customers. So each week, Dell give away their ad break space. So now I'm going to hand over to this week's winner of Dell's independent ad break.
Hello, sisters. It's the founders of Sisterhood School CIC here, the social enterprise where all girls and gender expansive youth design their place in the world. We are calling all amazing young change makers aged 13 to 20. So if you're passionate about designing a future that works for girls, people and planet, then listen up. Sisterhood School isn't your ordinary school. It's the place where you take the lead. We empower girls and youth to build their creative confidence, create social action and lead on building a future they want to see. I owe a lot to the safe spaces that enabled me to explore my creativity, to grow and learn through a challenging teenhood, which is one of the reasons why Sisterhood School exists today. At Sisterhood School, you'll work with incredible mentors and peers on projects that matter to you, developing change-making skills for life from discovering your purpose to pitching and sharing your voice with confidence, whilst being surrounded by a sisterhood and network that truly has your back. We will get you closer to your goals and designing the life that you want. For 15 of our changemakers, they came together and turned their passion for wanting to see more diverse authors on their bookshelf by writing, publishing and selling thousands of copies of an anthology written for teenagers by teenagers. No matter your background or interests, Sisterhood welcomes you to make your mark and create your place in the world. Support Sisterhood and follow us at Our Sisterhood and nominate a young changemaker in your life. Teachers, you can book programs at oursisterhood.co.uk. Donate today to empower future changemakers and find us again at Our Sisterhood.
Thank you, Dell, for your support and generosity. If you'd like to find out more about DWEN and connect with brilliant and inspiring women, or you'd like to be in with a chance to have your very own ad break here on this series, head to holly.co/Dell. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration. This is an amazing moment, I think, for anyone even listening who might be nodding their head. It's the honesty to yourself and then to others that you have changed, that actually the person that you were 20 years ago is not the person you are today. And yet potentially all the foundations of your life have been built, where it's a marriage, a family, a career,
yes,
on the 20-year-old Rosie, right? And this is a very difficult time that I don't think us women talk about, but it leads us nicely actually into your next part of your journey of reinvention. You know, you, as you said, you enrolled on a coaching course, you began writing again. You said you felt as though your creativity had returned. You said you felt, though, in hindsight, the brink of burnout was potentially a gift to you.
Yeah, I do now sort of think of it instead of a breakdown, but a breakthrough, because crucially, it gave me a moment to pause. And that pause is so, so essential, because I hadn't done that for the last 23 years that I'd worked in the media. And I think this is especially, you know, that us midlife women in our generation, Holly, and probably lots of your co's and the listeners to this podcast, because we were the generation brought up believing that we had to find a career that was going to be our life, that that's what we would do, that we would set off. You know, you're asked at school, you fill out all of those forms to find out what is your career Well, I might do that for a bit and then I could segue into that. Or I've always been quite interested in this. Maybe I'll have a second career at that. And I think actually other generations are much more open to that. But I think for us, you know, it was an absolute shock to my core and my whole identity to think, maybe I'm not a magazine editor anymore, or I'm not an editor of Hello anymore. This isn't what I want to do. So, yeah, so actually I'd always enjoyed being coached in the past, and I love the whole vocabulary around coaching, which is all very positive. It's about a growth mindset, fostering, you know, a pathway to get towards more longer term goals. And it's about, you bring to coaching how you are on that day. It's not therapy, which often looks back, and, you know, the products of experiences you've had before, but coaching is about where are you now and how can you get to where you need to be. So I've always loved that vocabulary, and I had this really strong desire to learn again, feeling like I need to improve my skill set because I'm not learning anymore. I think I felt a bit stagnant churning out the same things. So I enrolled on a coaching course. I did it with Optimus Academy, who were brilliant. And I loved this course, which took 6 months and it was just half a day every single week. So a commitment to be there, to arrive, you know, with your present self, to be really engaged. Met a whole new group of people doing it who didn't care whether I'd been at a royal wedding or met the Queen, or, you know, it was completely me as me again, which I found amazing and absolutely loved. And did this course, learned so much about myself and my own values and what's really important to me, what drives me, what motivates me in my life now. So the deeper thinking, because I think often if we're not enjoying our working life or our career, it's tempting to look at job vacancies and again try and fit yourself into a vacancy or a particular role. But actually the real work comes in understanding who you really are at this stage of life. So I loved doing the course, not only for the self-awareness, but also because I now have this skill set to be able to help other women through transitionary periods, which I'm absolutely loving. I have a few private clients and I've got lots of plans to bring this kind of thinking and a coaching mindset to lots more midlife women who feel that they need to reinvent aspects of their lives too, because we all deserve a second chapter. Exactly. And it is out there waiting for you, but it does take work to really understand and start to shape and to feel what it should be.
And I mean, amongst all of that as well, when you talked about going on this journey and finding your creativity again, you've written 4 books and your book Be Kind, which is, as you said, your first nonfiction book, is filled with tips on how to improve happiness, health and positive thinking. Tell me about, like, because that was written in a time where you hadn't quite got to this stage.
No.
And yet this relationship with this book is almost crazy, no? I mean, it's almost coming from the beginning. It was almost coming out of you.
Well, I think it was the beginning of me actually thinking deeply about the subject of kindness and what kindness really means. And I think it did start me on this course, you know, that I'm now sort of deeply in and moving through, because I started to think deeply about what self-compassion is and what does kindness to yourself actually mean. So a big chapter in the book is about kindness to yourself. And, you know, in my head, being kind to yourself meant perhaps running a long bath for an evening and lighting the candles that I really love at home, or listening to some relaxing music. And of course, to some people, all of those things are valid and they are a way to be kind to yourself. But actually, really, self-compassion means your internal relationship with yourself and really understanding who you authentically are and talking to yourself in a way that you might talk to your best friend, kind of nurturing yourself. So even in those moments, as I've talked about, where I really felt upset and confused, at least I sort of knew to kind of lean into it, to sort of tell myself that actually this is okay. You know, we're actually getting somewhere. this is actually a light bulb moment. Yes, it's hard. As we know, all the best light bulb moments are, they come after a period of struggle or challenge, and they push us.
Yes.
And that, you know, though, overcoming those difficulties then move us into possibly our best chapters yet.
But it's so scary, no?
It is. And it's not to get stuck in them. And that is really hard. And that's where coaching comes in, and the retreats that I'm going to announce soon for midlife women will help them really tackle these at a practical level. So you'll do
Will these be happening this year?
They will, yes. In October, the first ones are going to be.
Oh,
that's the first time I've said that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This is your new chapter. And so are you basically taking everything that you went through and making it into an actual business, an actual, not a business, but a movement, maybe a moment that other women can sort of pinpoint the moment that they were brave enough to make a change or to think about a change? Yeah.
Well, I think I'm seeing, you know, what felt like a big gap in the market when I was going through this, and I turned to some one-to-one coaching. But obviously that's not cheap to do, and you have to know the right person to go to, because there are all kinds of coaches out there, and that's not easy.
Yes.
So I felt there was a gap in the market, and I would have jumped to go on a one-day retreat, because I also understand that it's not practical for lots of midlife women to take off for 5 days or a week or whatever it is to find themselves. Because
I mean, the stress
again,
of just doing
the
that.
Stress, yeah, and also negotiating that with your other half and the kids and your job.
Oh my gosh.
And obviously a lot of things we have to do in tandem. Like, I'm not suggesting people just reinvent their careers and leave the job that they hate, because that would be madness. It's got to be rooted in reality, and there's got to be a financial plan behind it. But where do you even start with that? So this day is that chance to pause, which, as I mentioned earlier, was so important for me. And ideally to pause before you get to a point where your body is physically making you pause because you've been made unwell in some way, to take that time out. To be, you know, that act of kindness to yourself might be booking on this course for 1 day, although you can do 2 or 3 days, but you could at least just do one to start the seedlings of some plans. And then to listen to the experts, to properly have some one-to-one advice as well, to ask the questions that are really personal to you, and then to start to organise and to start putting some of those plans into place. So again, feeling that you know what your next first little steps might be, because sometimes the big goal is overwhelming as well, and that can paralyze us and lead us to do absolutely nothing until, you know, perhaps we get physically unwell.
How exciting. How many women are nodding their heads right now? Because I think you have just identified a complete, I don't want to put it in business terms, but gap in the market. There is this, as you said, this second chapter, which unless you're notified of, unless you're inspired to be curious about, to then be given the tools, to then understand how you might map it, it can be completely overwhelming. And tell me, what else in the future? More books?
Yeah, more books. I'm finishing a novel, as you mentioned earlier. The sort of creativity came back when I had a chance to pause. I mean, this book, HarperCollins, have been amazing, because this book is like well over 2 years late, and they have stood by me and gave me that, you know, chance to sort of go through my semi-breakdown and come out the other side, and it's a much better book because of it. So this is a fiction book. It's the third book in the Stylist series I write, which is all set in that sort of fashion celebrity world. But again, my mate, central character Amber Green, who there's quite a lot of me in her, I would say, has gone on her own little journey around authenticity and the way that she styles her clients. She's almost like a therapist come stylist, because she knows that no star can shine bright on the red carpet or in their public life unless they're fixed inside and they really love who they are inside. So actually, you know, that's probably been influenced by my journey. And then there'll be a follow-up to the Be Kind book. But I'm still on the journey with that book, and that will take in more of this kind of midlife reinvention.
You need to almost experience it yourself and go through it.
That's
and
sort it. Of see, I'm still
help
learning.
Us know what's on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You need to go and do
that's
the trek.
It. But there is another side. That's the thing. You know, midlife is just going to get longer and longer. It's, you know, it's not just the 10 years of our 50s, you know. We're now going to be working for a long time, and hopefully it won't even feel like work because we'll feel so fulfilled in what we do.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's hopefully what the goal is. Mm-hmm. As you know, I adore you as a person. You've completely inspired me. I think that the subject that you are now passionate about is it needs someone as optimistic and organized and professional in a way as yourself to look at it, because we can look at areas, can't we, and do things, but unless you have a professional mindset on it to help take us through the journey. It's great talking about it, but people are like, I can't get hold of it.
These retreats are going to be really kind of, you will do the work. They're not just about sitting and listening to lots of people talk about how they managed to nail their life. You know, you will actually uncover, you know, the authentic you, and we'll take you through a number of exercises and workshops to do that. And I've honestly got the best coaches lined up, the best experts in their fields, the real genuine experts on midlife.
Gosh. And again, you know how busy women's life is. Mm. So that's why you're making sure that it's efficient. You know that actually, if I'm going to give myself this pause, please, can I take out of it what's going to change my life?
And please, can it be in a nice environment as well? This will be a lovely treaty day as well.
Yeah.
So that it's compassionate to you on that level. Because we all want to go somewhere nice in which to learn.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I have loved every second talking to you. I can't believe the hour has gone already.
Oh, gosh.
I ask on this podcast, Rosie, about the highs and lows and liken it to being on a roller coaster. And obviously your roller coaster and your cart would be bloody glamorous, I have to say. And, you know, you have your cameras in the right angles. I mean, even us talking here on the podcast, I can see how, you know, you've learned, you know, the tricks of the trade.
Oh, I don't know about that. I realised I hadn't tidied up very well behind me. But
look at my it's great. Tell me what you would say on this journey has been one of your greatest lows.
Oh, do you know what? I always find it so tricky to think of lows because, as we talked, I don't really see them as lows. I really have got such a positive mindset that I feel like I can switch most things. I think what happened to me that day in that hotel room was, you know, in that brief moment, a kind of a shock, really, rather than a low. Mm. But it has turned out to be the biggest breakthrough. So I tend not to focus on lows, but I suppose that was a moment I just thought, right, my body is telling me something. Mm. Things need to change.
It must have been an incredibly scary moment where you actually said, I'm not continuing like this. So,
but also empowering in a way.
The call to your husband, the call to work, it must have been logistically. To make that break, you almost had to commit.
Yeah, which is always scary. Change is so scary. But I think, you know, by that point, really, there had already been quite a lot of thinking to get to there.
Yeah. And your high?
Definitely.
What would your greatest high
be? Greatest high.
I mean, you'd
be
sitting in some unbelievable dress, by the way. I'm picturing you. Getting ready for like the Oscars or whatever, there.
Do you know what? My
looking
biggest
gorgeous.
High is having my children, because I had them fairly late at 38 and 40, and it was a struggle to get pregnant through. No, I was one of those that was just unexplained infertility and then finally got pregnant. Mm. So I would say having them, I never, ever take them for granted, and the gift of motherhood. And even though I had horrific birth experiences, I definitely wasn't particularly good at that. You know, holding them in my arms is just the biggest high in life.
Gosh, I'm so pleased that you you got what you wanted and you became a mum and you know, and it's I'm hearing about your kids as well, and they're obviously happy, healthy, vibrant children, like your childhood was, and I'm so pleased that that was gifted to you. Rosie, I'm going to hand over to you now. At this point of the podcast, as everyone knows, that I ask the guests to write a letter to their younger self, and I don't know what you're going to say, but I wanted to thank you on behalf of myself and all listeners for sharing a piece of your soul with us today.
Oh, thank you, Holly. I love talking to you.
I'd loved it too.
Oh. Right. Dear Rosie, I know you don't always like to be told things until you've reached that conclusion yourself, but I feel I know you well enough to share a few observations with the benefit of nearly 49 years of experience. All that writing and cutting song words out of smash hits you did as a young girl will stand you in great stead, because you will go on to edit one of Britain's best loved magazines, become an author several times over, and tell stories for a living. What a joy. Your career will bring you so much happiness, but a big test comes when you wear yourself out with it all. Learning to pace yourself doesn't come easy, it never has, but your crash becomes a chrysalis for a new chapter, quite possibly your best one yet. Go for it, girl, but take the learnings from this time with you. Pause, reflect, and organise will become your mantra for good reason. You will wear your heart on your sleeve, and as you go through life, it will hit you hard when people don't turn out to be as kind or trustworthy as you thought in return. But don't let your positive spirit be thwarted. Focus on what you know to be right, because your kind heart and good instincts will be your superpower. You'll even write a book on this subject and share the power of compassion with a great many people. You will thrive when doing this. Ultimately, you will learn that no one thinks about others as much as they do themselves. So try not to worry about their opinions or expectations and be true to your own course. Once you learn how to tune into your authentic self, your life is going to open up in the most exciting way. Be brave. Follow your instincts. Surround yourself with people who truly champion you as you champion them. Regarding your personal life, listen closely to this one. There will come a point when a guy asks you to marry him on bended knee in China, and you're initially not sure. Make sure you say yes, Rosie. It will turn out to be the best big decision you will make. He's the most amazing life partner and father, and the life you build together will be beyond your imagination. When you decide you want to have children, do go and get everything checked out. It will save you years of wondering why things are not happening, and one simple op will solve all that fast. You might wish you did this sooner. Although, with hindsight, the experience teaches you an important lesson in learning to be patient, and that the best things often take time to percolate. You will never take motherhood for granted. It's the greatest gift and source of happiness for you. Your two beautiful boys will be your proudest accomplishment. Rosie, remember that, at the end of the day, giving love and being loved is all that really matters. Whether that is love for your family and the love of great friends, or the love for yourself, faults and all. When things get busy, boil it right back down to that. Oh, and stay away from sunning, it will wreck your hair, and tequila will never agree with you, so forget it. Other than that, you are enough and you are loved. Have lots of fun, Rosie.
just pulling it together a little bit.
Oh, Holly.
Loved. I mean, you know what? I think you talk, I feel like your next chapter is just going to be tonic for so many of us women.
Oh,
because
I hope
there are so many people who don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Who don't talk about it, who are going through hell.
Yes.
Who are either through a career that they cannot keep up with,
or a divorce, you know, midlife,
motherhood, a divorce, or to anything, or all of these things. And let's just put a bit of hormones into all of that, and in silence a lot of the time. And I think what you're doing and bringing out from your own discovery, and, you know, be loved and love yourself. And you just saying that, entering your 50s with hope and optimism, is just going to be incredible for us. And I'm so happy it happened to you. But I'm happy it happened to you, but I'm happy it happened to you for all of us, because I think it's going to be in safe hands with you.
Aww.
And that's a really important thing. So thank you so much for sharing with us today, Rosie.
Oh, Holly, thank you so much. What a lovely thing to say. Yeah, well, I hope so. And if my journey can inspire, you know, one person, then it's really been worthwhile talking about it. So thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.